Hello, hello. Welcome to this week's College Investor Live. I am excited to be joined by Allison. She is from Inspired Budget, and we are going to be talking about budgeting today, which, you know, honestly, I don't know if it's everyone's favorite topic, but I think it's one of your top favorite topics.
It's never a topic I thought would be something I enjoy. That was like a surprise to me, but I do love it.
That's awesome. Well, one of the things I love that you do every week is you literally do these budgets for people. I love it. Take a picture.
Sorry.
But like you literally draw out budgets for people's scenarios, which I think is amazing. But before we dive into all this budgeting stuff, why don't you take a second, introduce yourself. I'm going to do some housekeeping here. And remember, this is a live. So if you guys have any questions, throw them in the comments and we'll hopefully answer any budgeting questions or personal finance questions that you have. But Allison, go ahead and introduce yourself.
Awesome. And I'm also going to be sharing this. So that's why I'm not being rude. I just have my phone here to share. My name is Allison Baggerly. I'm the founder of Inspired Budget. And I really aim to break down budgeting and just really personal finance in a way that makes sense. My background is I was an elementary school teacher for 10 years. My husband and I love spending money. Like I did not grow up learning about money. I did not go to college and learn about money there. I learned through changing my entire mindset about money. My husband and I paid off over six figures worth of debt on two teacher salaries. And a surprise to everyone, and a shocking turn of events, I fell in love with personal finance, and Inspired Budget has allowed me to take that passion for personal finance and finding a sense of peace of mind and self-control over my money and combine it with my skill set of teaching to help break down budgeting in a way that is not intimidating, shameful, and a way that makes sense to nearly everyone.
Love it. I love it. Well, like, you know, one of the biggest hangups I think that people have with budgeting is, where do we even start? Like literally, like I feel like, let's just say like I'm this person, I know that I should be doing something better with my money. You know, I'm making ends meet maybe, like, you know, I'm feeling like I'm not going negative potentially, but I don't feel like I'm going anywhere. Like where do I even start? Right.
Oh my gosh. That was me. Let me just post this real quick. Join us here. Okay. I'm posting the link for everyone. That was me. That was like, I was super confused. I was just kind of scraping by. I wasn't like hurting enough to where I was like, I mean, this is the way it's supposed to be, right? And I think starting really with where do you want to spend your money? A lot of times we spend our money on things that we don't really want, but the world tells us that we want. And a lot of times we spend our money on things that are necessary, like our minimum debt payments, student loan payments, and all of the shelter and food and transportation. But you would be surprised at how many times we are spending money on things that other people want us to do or that aren't really important to us. So that's where I had to start. I had to start with, okay, the world will tell me that all the advertisers, the world will tell me you need to spend your money here. But that doesn't necessarily mean it's where I value spending my money. So I like to start with just listing out what you enjoy spending money on, and then look at your spending and see what falls in that category and what doesn't. Now, I know you don't enjoy spending money on your car payment or your student loans, but those are kind of necessities. So being able to look at what you don't enjoy spending money on and saying, okay, I'm willing to let go of that so that way I can make the rest of my budget and spending plan work.
What if you don't even know what if you don't even have a good grasp on what you're spending? Like, I almost feel like we got to go peel the onion back another layer. Like,
yes, like, I had this, I had this moment. So when I was in college, Robert, I just lived off of my student loans as one does.
Money came in, money goes out. You're good,
yeah.
Right?
Like, and I remember my mom being like, you're going to have to pay these back one day. And I was like, shh, you don't know what you're talking about, mom. Like, just don't even, just, you're being a Debbie Downer. We're not going to talk about that. And my student loans meant, you know, I had to live off of them. And I remember opening up my checking account one day and saying, okay, Allison, you have $450. I was like, great. Next day, I go to the grocery store to buy my groceries and swipe my debit card, decline, swipe it again, decline, swipe it a third time, decline. I'm like, oh, this is, something must be wrong, you know, and put all my groceries back, did the walk of shame, go home, open up, you know, I didn't have a smartphone, go home, log into my little Dell laptop and see I have no money in my checking account because I didn't realize that my rent check was about to clear. And so I had to call my mom and say, Mom, I need money. I mean, it was March. I had until May. All of my student loans were spent. And she said, I will help you under one condition. You come home this weekend and we track your spending. And so I drove home that weekend and sat there in my childhood room, and she had printed off my bank statements. And there was a little bit of motherly judgment there of seeing how much I was spending on eating out and shopping at the mall and coffee and bars. And we put all of it into Microsoft Money, which
that doesn't even exist anymore. But yeah,
I know. Yes. May you rest in peace, Microsoft Money. You were the OG. And I started seeing how much money I had been spending. And it was a very eye-opening experience for me because I was just completely unaware. It was ignorance is bliss situation until it wasn't. So I think it's really important for people, especially when they're just starting, to actually track their spending, whether you're using an app, whether you're using Quicken, which is what I use now. You can't use Microsoft Money anymore. A spreadsheet you create, because sometimes we're not even aware of our patterns. And that can be very eye-opening. So once I was able to do that, I essentially just said, okay, how do I live until I hit zero and just make it and survive? And I had to go through these phases of understanding my money to where I got to the point where I said, okay, now I'm spending money. I'm not in the negative anymore. My card's not getting declined. I'm not saving any money or sending any extra money to debt. But what do I want to spend money on? And when I could figure that out, budgeting became easier. But I had to go through that process to get there.
And that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's where a lot of people really do need to start is let's get organized. Let's kind of track our stuff. Let's see what we have. And I think you mentioned, like you said, your mom kind of forced you into Microsoft Money, which is great. But some of us are stumbling into the tools. And I think one of the things you alluded to is use a tool that works for you. Mm-hmm. Whether that's an app, like I'm an app person as well. Yeah. I like using the apps to track, but you know, maybe you're an Excel person. Maybe you're a pen and paper person. I knew a lot of pen and paper people, and they literally keep like a monthly journal and like write it out. And it sounds tedious, but you know, if you do keep it to like one checking account, one credit card, you could probably do that. As you know, I think, you know, marriage, kids, jobs add a lot of complexity to that. But when you're young and starting out, you know, you can probably do it pen and paper, but getting organized, I think, is key. But then you said, you got to choose what you want. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you make those decisions on what you want? I know people tell us what to do. Mm-hmm. People say you should save for retirement. You should save to buy a house, but I don't want to. Maybe I don't know. Maybe
I know. I
like, where do you start?
You know, I took the idea of I'm willing to sacrifice now, like temporarily in a season, to live in abundance later. And I had to continue to tell myself that, because as someone that was in their 20s, you know, I started having children young. I got pregnant at 24, married at 24, pregnant at 24, had a baby all at 24. 24 was a big year for me. And there were times when I just wanted to take these trips and go to Europe and do the things I saw my friends doing. But I had to realize, okay, it's okay for me to live in a season of sacrifice now. And the world wants your money. Advertisers want your money. Everyone wants to pull at your money in all these different directions. And they will if we let them. So it's also about coming to terms with, okay, what do I actually enjoy? For me, I don't find joy in a really expensive car and a name brand clothing, designer purses. I don't find joy in that. And that's okay. So would I spend my money there? No, I'm going to spend my money on other things like trips. I just booked a surprise vacation with my oldest son. I'm going to pull him out of school and we're going to go to Universal Studios for 3 days. And that is where my joy comes from. I enjoy traveling in nature. So I might buy a pop-up camper and camping equipment when someone else buys a nice car, and that's fine, but it's coming to terms with what brings you joy. So I recommend just sitting down. I'm a big journal person. I journal every morning for 10 minutes, and just what does your perfect day look like? Where do you enjoy spending money? And being able to reflect on that, because there's so much noise in this world that we've grown so accustomed to listening to all the noise and not listening to ourselves.
And I think you're spot on with that. But I also see this trouble when you're 24. How do you choose what makes you joyful versus like the judgment or stigma you feel? Like a car is a great example, right? Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people could actually do a lot less with a car. You know, pick that 5-7-year-old vehicle. It's just getting you from point A to point B. But like there's this like social stigma that like you have to like ignore or overcome or feel about it. Like how do you have any tips on like how to overcome that, or where do you think that people can like learn that? I don't know.
I think a lot of it comes from number one, maturity, because I do remember that. I remember, I remember buying a car when I actually was driving when I got pregnant. I was driving a total, it had been totaled. So it had been rebuilt, 2-door Chevy Cavalier, junk title. I knew I can't take a baby home in the hospital from this. Like that's not responsible. And I bought a car used, and it was my dream car. It had electric windows. It had a CD player and leather seats, which was a luxury. And it was the most amazing Toyota Camry I've ever had in my life. It was a Toyota Camry. I felt like I'm driving the nicest car. And over time, I realized that that car didn't matter. And part of that reason is because the people I was surrounding myself with, the community I was with, the people I worked with, my friends, they didn't care. There was never a conversation about what kind of car I did or did not drive. And so I think oftentimes, especially for people who work in jobs where they are surrounded by people that do have these nice cars, I'm thinking of realtors, they feel that pressure. But when you surround yourself purposefully with people who do not care, then all of a sudden that pressure is removed and we don't feel it anymore, because we're not getting that from the people that we are spending the most of our time with.
And I think that's a great call. I mean, it's that famous saying, right? You are the sum of like the five people you spend the most time with. But it's very hard. I actually was in the other trap, whereas I graduated college and I was surrounded by people that drove nice cars. And granted, now looking back in hindsight, they all financed these cars and probably couldn't afford these cars. And the cars probably contributed to a lot of their financial burden that they had. And as a result of that, but I went and bought the new, you know, I think I paid $42,000 for a brand new car when I graduated college, because I earned it.
Yeah.
Right?
And I deserve it. You deserve it. You worked hard.
And I just think of how much money that was just a waste of. One, my other car was old, but I could have probably bought a used car for half the price that would have still been a nice upgrade, but saved me significant amounts of money. But, you know, at least I overcame that. And I drove that car till it died. I drove it for 11 years, basically, put 120 plus thousand miles on it. So it's like, I didn't do it again. But it is very hard to overcome that. And I do think it's harder when you're young. You just said seasons of life earlier. And I think it's so true. When you're young, you know, you also have a little more grace to make sillier money decisions.
Yes.
Because you have more time to overcome it. You're also probably earning the least amount you're ever going to earn in your life. It's only going to go up from there. You have probably the least amount of responsibility you're going to have in your life. And so you can stumble through that. But I guess it comes down. So we have the psychological aspect. We have your joy, like what brings you joy. But what if bringing you joy doesn't, whatever you want to spend that money on still doesn't quite fit in your budget? where do you go from here? Like, let's just say we have this fixed budget. You're making, you know, $3,000-$4,000 a month. You have your rent. What do you do? Like, how do we fit that in?
I love how do you fit it in? If you're okay, so this is where I want to talk about your level of norm. I think
what's level of norm?
Your level of norm. So for instance, let's say that when I was in my 20s, my level of norm was, you know, we lived in this beginner, smaller house, just very standard home. We didn't go on all of these vacations. We didn't have any of this nice stuff. We were really working to pay off debt. We were spending time with our family at home. Our level of norm was a very basic lifestyle. As we have gotten older, as our income has increased, as we've made better decisions with our money, our level of norm has moved up. We are no longer in that older level of norm. So now, anytime I'm comparing myself to people who are in the next stage of norm that I might be wanting to. And that's where my temptation comes through. So, and I think it's important to realize that once you're used to a level of norm, it's really hard to go back down to a different level, or sometimes to just stay in your level of norm. And it's not bad where you are. So I would say, first off, ask yourself, where is your level of norm? What is even realistic for you? And remembering that, you know, if you are at a point where you want all of these things, but you can't fit it in your budget, it's very easy in that moment to say, well, I work hard, I deserve this, let me just finance it. But it's important to remember that just because you can't afford it now, just because this isn't your level of norm now, doesn't mean that it won't be in your future. So I'm always trying to remind myself that just because I can't have it now doesn't mean I can't have it or work towards that in the future and set that as a goal to get to. We live in a society where we get things now, right away, you know, add to cart in one click, it can be here, and, you know, sometimes same day delivery. And so we have to really teach ourselves and practice that patience and that goal setting as an opportunity to find something to work towards.
That's great. And I do think our society has kind of positioned us in this instant gratification mindset. Mm-hmm. Amazon's probably a big offender of that. And I kind of also think of, you know, wait 24 hours before you pull the trigger. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised on just like little steps that you take, like instead of just hitting buy now, give yourself 24 hours and say, hey, do I still need that?
Yes.
And
I have a list. I have a list on my notes app, in my notes app, of things I want to buy.
Okay.
Like I just keep a list. And sometimes I find that after, because I love to spend money, I find that after I write that thing down, it's almost like, okay, I've put it out there. I have it there in place. And sometimes I completely forget about it. And it's just, it leaves my mind. And that's how you know, okay, it wasn't really important. It wasn't as valuable as it felt in the moment, because sometimes our emotions get in the way of that.
Absolutely. Because like, honestly, you start going down this path, you're researching something, you're seeing what other influencers are doing with it. You watched a YouTube video and it hypes you up. You get all excited to buy it. But then, like you said, if you take a pause, put it on your list, like, are you still as hyped up the next day? Are you onto the new thing, or is there something else, or is something better? Who knows, right? But how important is it to you? So when I think about budgeting, I always have this mindset of cutting expenses. Mm. I don't know. Is it common or two? And like, how realistic is that mindset? I think that's what everyone thinks about budgeting, but I don't know. Is it true?
Oh, it's absolutely what everyone thinks. That's exactly what I thought. I used to think, okay, I'm going to write a budget just for this one period of time. And after that, I'm done. I'm not going to let this budget control my life. We give a budget a power that it never asked for and that we have assigned to it. We have assigned this idea of a budget and given it this power over us. And so it's all about changing the way you see it. And now if you are in debt or you do have money goals, sometimes it does come down to cutting. Whenever it was me and I was tracking my spending and seeing how much I was spending on these things, If I did not write a budget back in college, but if I had, I would have cut things out, but not because the budget made me, but because I saw my patterns and realized that's not really what I want to do. So I like to see budgeting as just essentially your intentions, your plan. And if it doesn't go as planned, it's okay. It doesn't mean I'm a failure. It doesn't mean that the budget failed. It just means that life is uncertain. And so a lot of times we do associate it with cutting things out, and you don't have to do that. You can add things to your budget. And then I just like to edit out the things that I don't want. And remember that just because you edit it out doesn't mean you can't add it back in.
Well, and I think you just nailed it. It's a season thing. It's a time, and you know, when you made that budget, it's that time. And you know, honestly, when you start budgeting, your budget seems to me like it will change every month for a little bit. And yeah. then it'll probably be a little stricter for longer as you get a good routine down, you understand mm-hmm. where you're at, and then you can be even more longer term fluid in terms of what your goals are. But it should seems like it should evolve with you, right?
Yes. In fact, I've never thought about this or said this out loud, but I think that sometimes we see our budget, it's actually a true reflection of how we see money at the time in our life. I have never realized that, but I think that is so true. I saw a budget as this terrible, awful thing that was going to not let me live my life and spend my money because I had a bad relationship with money, because I had no control over money. Now I look forward to writing my budget because I know that it brings me a sense of peace, and I get to immediately say like, okay, let's send money to investing. Let's send money to Christmas, HOA, this travel thing I want to do. And I look forward to it because I have that healthier relationship with money.
Oh, I love that. And I mean, I always viewed it as like an adult report card. Like your budget is like, you know, no. like I like kind that. Of it is. But here's why is that, and it goes back what you just touched on is your relationship, right? Is mm-hmm. like either your budget's working for you and you're feeling good about it, or mm-hmm. you have some areas that you need to improve on. And people react to that differently. Some people react yeah. to that as I need to improve on it is like, let's improve it. Some people react as it is like a blame game, or it's mm-hmm. other people yep. or everything else. And, you know, they don't take that accountability around it. Yeah. And it can be very hard to change that accountability mindset mm-hmm. to set those goals. But I think it goes back to what do you want? Do you want to feel empowered mm-hmm. by money, or do you want to feel, you know, really struggle
stressed
with money, stressed about money, mm-hmm. all of those feelings. And it's not a good feeling, right?
Yeah. See, I like to think of it not as a report card, but as like a diary entry. That's just, I guess it's a budget. It's just so personal and it can change. And so many times it's, you know, comes out as like a reflection of our feelings, and how we feel about our budget tends to be how we feel about money. And when money is tight, it's harder to write a budget. Just flat out, like it's harder and it's not as fun. And there is some stress with it, but there is a purpose. And the purpose is to essentially be intentional with your money so that you move forward and not backward. And when you have more money and money is not as tight, a budget can be more fun.
So if money is tight, what are like your five tips to put some buffer into that budget?
So first off, I would say make a list of things that you're actually spending money on that you don't want to spend money on and cut it back. And don't see it as a restriction. See it as freedom. Because for me, if I no longer have to spend money on, like, one of the things I do not spend money on is a gym membership. I don't like going to a gym to work out. I don't want to leave my home. So if I were to cut that expense out, I would feel like freedom. Like, oh my gosh, I've just freed up $60 a month to spend on something else I actually want. So see those cuts as freedom in your budget for that extra cash flow. So I would say, number one, do that. Number two, track your spending, because it's going to come – it's going to allow you to identify patterns that we can't see in ourselves and to really face our habits. Because I might say that I – cook at home 6 nights a week, but my spending might show me that I'm actually cooking at home 4 nights a week. And if that's the case, fine, own it. There's no shame in it, own it. And so that way you can make your budget reflect that. Okay, you said five tips to-
But I like the subscription one. I like the gym membership, all that, because subscriptions get you.
Yes.
And it's like a death by 1,000 paper cuts of your monthly budget, because mm-hmm. every $4.99, $6.99 gym membership, all these subscriptions, and how much do you really need all these services? Mm. And or how much could you actually be getting free with something else? So I think a lot of people,
yes.
like I had a friend the other day that was paying for Disney Plus, but they had Verizon and they should have been getting Disney Plus yeah. for free, but they never canceled it. And so it's like, you just spent $100 this last year on something mm-hmm. that you should have had for free. So it's not even telling you to take it away, but like, please yes. look at all your subscriptions.
You know what I've done recently is we sat down, we look at our subscriptions probably about twice a year. We really do an audit, and it's not like super nerdy where we're sitting down with our glasses and computers and looking. It's just a conversation. And my husband was like, okay, HBO Max, we're paying $15 a month. Are you using this? And I was like, absolutely I am. He was like, when was the last time you watched a show? And I could not remember. I logged into HBO Max. I was like, oh, I don't watch any of this. So we canceled it. And then yeah. White Lotus had a second season. So I literally signed up for HBO Max for 1 month so I could watch my season of White Lotus and then cancel it. Because no, who says I'm not allowed to do that?
Right.
It brought me joy to watch that for $16, essentially $15.99. And I'm no longer hanging on to that when I don't need it. I could have also asked a friend for their login.
You could also, and I also think, you know, you could buy the episodes. Like the other thing is, like, you don't even need to sign up for the subscription. I think you can buy the whole season of a show for like $25 or something like that. Right.
Yeah,
which is maybe more, it's maybe more than 1 month, but I think it's less than 2 months. So enjoy that. I mean, there's just basically there's alternatives to these subscriptions.
Yes.
I think people need to think about that. Do you have Sirius Radio? Plug your phone into the car, stream your music and don't necessarily pay for the radio, right? Like
exactly.
Just, or the old fashioned way. Listen to the real radio.
Oh, that's
but
what
I
do.
I don't
I
even
listen
know
to the
if
radio.
We do that anymore.
I listen
right?
to the radio.
Okay.
I do. I'm like, okay. But of course I drive like half a mile every day and that's it. So I don't get a lot of radio time in.
But yeah, there's alternatives. Find it. All right. So sorry, I cut you off. You had one and two. What other tips do you have to really help people if they're struggling to make ends meet on their budget? Like,
okay. The biggest one, which I really should have started with this first, is like make your money have the biggest impact in terms of the four areas of your budget where we tend to spend the most, which is housing, transportation, food, and insurance. So for instance, look and shop around for better car insurance, home insurance, all of those things. Once you're taking 30 minutes to do it, and it can have a massive impact over the entire year. So we want to do that for housing. We want to do that for insurance, food, looking at your food costs, and then transportation, especially like you said, car. It's a big deal to let go of a car that maybe you paid $42,000 for, but you could have gotten a car that you paid $20,000 for. Maybe it's time to make that decision. Weigh the pros and cons. See what you can do instead. How much money would that free up every month if you were to go down from a $700 car payment to a $300 car payment? And then ask yourself if it's worth it. Play with the numbers. I used to always, this is so nerdy of me, and I can't believe I'm about to admit this. I used to write like sample budgets. Of, okay, if I want to do something and I want to cut this out, let me write almost like a sample budget of what my life would be like without this expense, because that would motivate me. I would see what could I do with those things. And I'm talking about big expenses, not small ones. And it allowed me to envision what my spending could be like without that item.
Yeah. And I love that. So the car one's a huge one because it's not just the payment, but it's all the other stuff too. Insurance, like you just said, and talk about your insurance. If you buy an older used car that's less money, your insurance costs will also go down every single month. Like your registration fees, depending on where you live, California is a very high tax state. They charge a lot to register your car. A new car could be like $1,000 a year to register.
Are you serious? Oh my gosh. You know how much we pay in Texas?
I don't even want to know. Probably like $20.
No. Oh, it's like 100.
Okay, but that's a significant savings, right?
Yeah.
So depending on where you live, you can save a lot of money on all these other expenses as well.
Yeah.
I think housing's a controversial one. Because you could live very cheaply depending on your season of life.
Oh,
but people significantly inflate their housing costs, you know, from comfort, quality, judgment, things like that. What do you think on that? Like,
you froze.
I did.
Okay, hold on. You're back.
All right. I said the housing cost one, like, how do you help people navigate that one? Because that one, I think, is typically everyone's number one expense. It's to me, the one where you could probably save the most money every single month if you're willing to make uncomfortable choices.
And that's the thing. I think that it's very unique. For instance, what I might tell someone that is a couple with no children might be very different than I would tell a family that has two kids in elementary school. Because typically, you wouldn't want to uproot those kids necessarily from the school system that they're in. So it is a really hard and unique one. My thing is, before you ever buy or rent or anything, make sure that it's within your budget. And that's where it's almost like you wish you could go back and do things a little bit differently, especially if you've already found yourself in the situation. But I personally don't want to spend more than 25 to 30% of my take-home pay on a mortgage or rent or anything like that, just because I want there to be room to be able to do other things. I want space in my budget. So I would say, I mean, it's really hard. I think that if you're single or if you don't have children, it's a lot easier of a lifestyle change.
Yep.
But either way, it's hard. Whether you're moving just somewhere different within your own city versus picking up and moving complete cities. And with kids, it's really hard. Really hard. But I would definitely keep your eye open for less expensive options. But that's hard to find these days. I mean, just the reality of it is,
it is.
That is so hard to find.
And I also think, you know, look at it within your whole budget. So I know depending on where you live, it could also dramatically change your transportation needs.
Oh,
and
yes.
So, you know, if you live in a more urban area, you could walk to mass transit mm-hmm. and or to work, or you work from home or something like that. Mm-hmm. Like you can pick something that now took a chunk of your transportation budget and yes. maybe significantly reduce that and maybe offset this. And this is where I think a lot of things play together. Mm-hmm. And it can be really challenging to like kind of navigate these questions, oh. right?
Absolutely. Like for instance, home size. I mean, downsizing to a house where, you know, you're still comfortable, but it's not as massive. You're spending less in furniture, less to heat and cool it, less to water the yard. I mean, we have sprinkler systems that go off. That's using water. So a smaller yard, a smaller house, just a smaller footprint in general is going to have a massive, massive impact on your budget that I think people just aren't aware how that trickles down.
Yeah. We're seeing that a lot in our area with energy prices, electric mm. bills, gas bills. Everyone's like, oh my God, this is like the highest, you know, gas and electric bill we've ever had. Mm-hmm. And you realize that if you do downsize, you did become more efficient. Those costs also go down, which play a big role in your budget.
Yes.
So I think the fourth one that we kind of touched on was food.
And oh, food.
I fall into this trap, but even I have been double checking and like second guessing my food costs lately, because I used to like, you know, DoorDash and Uber Eats because of the convenience factor. But then you're like, I'm suddenly paying $80 for like two sandwiches and like a delivery fee. And you're like, even this now is just getting so ridiculous mm-hmm. in food costs. So let's start like, you know, if you're no kids and then with kids, like
okay.
how do you navigate the food costs? Because I do think that's the other big piece of everyone's monthly budget. Mm-hmm.
So I think no matter whether you have kids, no matter who you are, having a plan in place, because I used to be the person that, and this was with no kids, I would spend $150 at the grocery store every week by myself for just me. I have no idea what gold I was eating, but I was spending money and wasting money, and then got married, had kids, and I was spending $150. And the difference was not the, you know, the quality of food. It was the plan I had in place. So I would say number one, make a plan that what meals you're going to eat at home, what meals you're going to go out to eat. And then this is a hard one, only buy what you need to buy. So often it's easy to walk up and down every aisle of the grocery store and just put things in your basket that look good at the time. And I have done that. However, that adds up really fast. And what ends up happening is we end up wasting food. So whether you are single and living alone, or you have children, you're a single mom, you have children, or you're married, whichever, I would say number one, have a plan, because we can be very wasteful and you're so unaware of it. And we hoard and stock up on things that we don't really even need a lot of the times, or don't even want later on down the line.
I mean, personally, I think COVID also threw us for a curveball when we all needed to like stockpile like weeks mm-hmm. of food and toiletries and household items. And then, yep. you know, here we are like 2-3 years later and you're like, I don't really need like 5 cans of lima beans. Like, why
exactly.
is this? Why is this here? What's going on?
Exactly. Right? And that's when you donate it to a food bank or something right. like that. But I think for me, for anyone, honestly, when it comes to food is just having a plan and following through on that plan 80% of the time. I'm not even saying 100% of the time. No one's perfect. But mm-hmm. 70-80% of the time, follow through on that plan. And yeah. when you do that, you can significantly reduce your costs on food, whether it's going out to eat or groceries.
I love that. I love that. Mm-hmm. So one thing you didn't touch on, though, in all this is earning more.
And oh, yes. See, earn more.
I'm in the big camp of, you know, a lot of people's like delta of their budgeting shortfalls. We're talking usually like $100 to $200 here. Mm-hmm. Usually we're not seeing like huge gaps. Huge gaps happen, but they could right. be small. Like I almost am like, if you're just trying to close like $100 or $200 gap, like there's so much opportunity out there to side hustle, earn more money, sell some of this junk that you accumulated over the years. Like there's a lot of potential there. I don't know what you think.
So I do like the idea of earning more. I'm a big advocate for that because I think sometimes it's not that people have a spending problem, it's an income problem. And I recognize that. For me, I think that I don't want a side hustle. I don't want to do that. I don't want my husband side hustling. I'm in that position of my life. You know, I'm in my 30s. My kids are in elementary school, moving into middle school next year. Oh my gosh, how is that possible? But I don't want more time taken away from what I am given. So for me personally, I would rather cut back or find ways to increase my income without doing more work or more time away. And just as a former teacher, you couldn't go in and negotiate a raise. That wasn't a thing that you could do. My husband can't do that. The only way my husband can make more money is if he takes on more responsibilities at work. And I'm wanting him to take on less responsibilities at work. I'm like, we don't need the money. You can make less, and that's perfectly, I would rather that. So I definitely think what depending on your season of life, earning more income in terms of side hustling and spending your time in exchange for money is a wonderful thing. And I have done that, and Matt has done that. But also just earning more income in your career, finding a career move that does increase your income. Like, for instance, we've done things where we switched school districts that would, in the past, give us a $10,000 to $15,000 raise. And it's uncomfortable because you're moving jobs and you're leaving your friends and your coworkers. But then again, your friends and your coworkers aren't paying your bills, and it's a job at the end of the day. So that's definitely something that you can do. But I'm not a big side hustle fan
Well,
anymore.
I love it. Well, like you said, it's season of life. So
Yes.
when I think of like myself, like 18 to 25,
Oh, yeah.
man, like I was wasting so much time and silly stuff. It's like I should be using that time to go earn more. I did a lot of side hustling then, but that was
Really?
also a springboard for me for later in life. Oh yeah, I was selling stuff through all through college when I graduated. I started the college investor when I was finishing college as a side hustle. So side hustling to me is great, but it is very season of life driven. And I think you said is having kids, your kids suddenly become the predominant force of your extra time, which is a good thing.
Exactly.
It's a good thing. Like we should be spending that time and using it, but it's harder to, find that extra time. But I do think career mo moves are also an amazing way to do it. And I think the sad realization that most people need to come to is that you do have to change jobs to earn more money.
Yes, and that is hard. I mean, you know, I moved jobs twice for money. And you feel like you're leaving a community. And that's a wonderful thing to have a job that you work with people that you enjoy being around. I think that that is so important when it comes to happiness. But I think also just being willing to realize that there are other priorities outside of that, and that just because you're leaving doesn't mean you lose that community altogether. But no, there was a time when my husband, he took a job. I was pregnant with my second son. I was 8 months pregnant. He left as a teacher, and he went to another school district, and he gave his, 2 weeks. I guess you don't really give 2 weeks notice. He quit essentially, maybe like 2 weeks before his contract said he could quit, or could not quit. And I was in this meeting in the summer doing professional development, and I was sitting next to the superintendent of our school district. And in the middle of a break, he turned to me and he said, "Allison, what can I do to get Matt to stay?" It was a very small school district, so one high school situation. So he knew Matt personally. And I said, "What do you mean?" And he said, "I don't want him to leave. What can I do to get him to stay?" Because he knew he wasn't going to get an amazing band director at that late in the game. You know, Matt brought a lot of value. And I said, "You would have to give him a raise." And he said, "What?" And I said, "He took a $10,000 pay increase going there, which is going to cover the daycare of this baby." And I like rubbed my stomach. And I said, "You would have to give him a raise." And he said, "I can't do that." And I said, "Well, then he's not coming back." And it's like, you can't, you know, money speaks volume. Money has such a massive impact. And because he made that choice for our family, it allowed us to continue towards our money goals. And then I followed suit the next year. I also moved and took a $2,000 pay increase that next year.
Well, and it's true. I mean, like, you know, I think a lot of employers do need to have this realization that we're not working for free. You're there because you're trying to earn an income. And, you know, pizza parties or rewards don't pay the bills. Like, you're there to earn money. And if someone's going to give you the same or more money for like the comparable work, you're going to move. And that's just the realization. But the hard part is you as the individual navigating that need to actually move, because your employer is not going to generously offer you more money. It's just, you know, not going to happen. Yeah. I do want to put an asterisk out there for teachers. I also, and maybe this is controversial, you throw this back to me if you disagree, but please don't go get a master's of education to increase your earnings.
Oh, I agree with you 1,000%.
Because it is, so the ROI of math, like just the math of it is there's only a 1% chance that you earn more over your career than the cost you to get your master of education. Don't do it. Just don't do it.
I agree. Now, unless you're going to use it, you're going to use it. So my husband did get a master's. I was like, you're crazy. Why would you do more work? But he had this time in his life that he thought, okay, I want to be a principal. I want to go in to become an assistant principal and a head principal, which I was begging him not to, because it's so much time. And it's more money, but not the money's not worth it to me. Like, I'd rather have time than money, personally. And he did it, but I will tell you, his was good. He did an online program that was brand new, and they gave away almost like 75% of it because they couldn't get people to join because it was brand new. And it was their first year doing this online program at this university in the Texas area. And so they had all of these grants and scholarships because they were trying to get their name out. Yeah. So it, but that is, we are the exception, not the rule for
exactly. And that's it. And it's how much you pay, right? So again, you can drive to work in a Camry or you could drive to work in a Range Rover. If you can afford the Range Rover and it doesn't like put you out on the street, go do whatever you want to do. And same thing with education. Like, if you can afford it, or you're getting it free, or your employer's paying for it, or something else, do it. But I just, to me, I see so many teachers get themselves into trouble. And now I'm seeing so many 60-year-old teachers saying that I can't retire because at 50, I went back and got my master's. And like, you know, they're like, I have all this debt and I need to work for like five more years, but I want to retire. And it's just, it hurts, right? And it's just like they got sold a bill of sale that doesn't help. So please just do your homework before you look that. And then,
and ask yourself if that's really what you want.
Yeah.
And then also, they have like, to be a librarian, you have to have a master's, but you don't get paid anything. I'm like, this is so stupid. Why do you need to have a master's to be able to give kids, you know, check out a book that's if you give a mouse a cookie? It's just, it makes me so mad. I'm very happy I'm no longer in teaching. I think only one person in a household, if you have teachers, I don't think you should ever have two teachers in a household. I think only one teacher is enough, you know, giving back. Two teachers is too much. So I quit and I said, Matt, you can hold on to that. Hold that torch for us.
There you go. We need teachers. We just,
we do.
We need teachers, and we want these teachers to be financially stable because we still need them to be teachers and give back and stuff. And we don't need them leaving the profession because of it, right?
And be in a healthy headspace and all the things that come with financial stability.
Absolutely. All right. So I think we hit four. Do you have any last budgeting tips that you think really make the difference for people?
Well, number five was to increase your income.
Was it? All right.
Yeah. But I would say, okay, fine. I'll give number five. Number five is give yourself grace. I think that so often we assume that the very first budget we write, or when we write a budget, it's going to go as planned, and it doesn't. It's not going to. That is not the life we live in. And so I personally love making mini budgets, and I make more mini budgets than I do regular budgets. And it's when something goes off track, or I have an unexpected expense, or I spent more at the grocery store because eggs are, you know, $50, then I will stop what I'm doing. And instead of giving up, I will make a mini budget, which looks like opening up the checking account, you know, the bank app on my phone, writing down how much money I have. And then even if it's just on a sticky note, I will write out, okay, what money do I have coming out in terms of bills that are being paid? How much money do I have? How many days do I have until payday? And just where is the rest of this money going to go? And it allows you to reset and like take back that control whenever you felt like it had been taken away from you.
I love it. I love it. Okay. Now we have this plan. We have this budget. We have these ideas. How do you like to do this in practice? Like, do you have a checking account? Do you have sinking funds? Do you have like seven savings accounts? Do you have like what does it look like logistically to make this work? I'm curious.
Okay. So for me personally,
what do you recommend too?
Okay. But. So logistically, I recommend budgeting the way you want to budget. I mean, I personally like paper and pencil because I like pretty highlighters and I like writing it out, but that's not what you have to do. And then logistically, my husband and I do have a joint checking account. That's just the way we've done it because we didn't know any other way, honestly, when we set it all up. He does have a separate checking account that, I say we don't do side hustles, but he edits my podcast. So I pay him to edit my podcast. He's a contractor for me. So he has spending money there, but we have one checking account that all the money comes into. We do have credit cards. So a lot of our bills are on credit cards strategically to earn points. Because we like to redeem those for travel. So most of our things are on credit cards. I pay off our credit card every single Friday because if the money is sitting in my checking account, I will find a way to spend it. It's a magical gift I have. And then we do have several savings accounts. We have a savings account that is directly connected to our checking account that has a portion of our emergency fund in it, not a lot, just maybe like 10% of it. And then we have an online high yield savings account with Ally where we break down all of our goals into buckets. So typically just one account with buckets. So we have a sinking fund for Christmas and this is set up, I mean, just auto draft. So I don't move this money. It moves on its own by the sheer force of magic. We have Christmas. We have HOA and we also pay extra for flood insurance because we live in Houston. So we just want to be protected there. So we have one for that. We group those together. We have Christmas. We have vacation. And then we just have our emergency fund. So I like a simple system. If I overcomplicate it and have 20 different funds, it's just going to stress me out because the moment I can't send some money to one of them, I'm going to feel like a failure. So I feel like if I have a really simple system that I can stay on top of, then I'm a happy girl. And like that's what I recommend is keeping it simple, make it something that you can actually keep track of and be consistent with.
Now, do you have like the savings account like automatically go from the paycheck, like your husband's paycheck? Does it like split like some into checking, some into savings? Or do you have that set up on the back end? Or like what is that? How do you assign what goes where? Like again, like are you a pay yourself first? Like we're going to put all this into savings and live off the rest? Or I don't know.
So for us personally, we have some of it that automatically goes to savings. So I send $175 every month to Christmas fund and I send $175 every month to HOA and flood insurance. So those are automatic. I do pull out cash to just have cash reserved for car maintenance and clothing because I get really annoyed as a mom when my kids need new shoes unexpectedly because they did something stupid in their shoes. Like that one time I had to buy my son new shoes because he kicked a tree over and over again. So having that set aside in cash helps me be a kinder person when I'm like, okay, let's go buy you shoes because shoes are crazy expensive for kids. So we do that. But in terms of getting paid, my husband and I get paid at the end of the month around the same time. I group those together and then most of our bills are done on auto draft and we write a budget and we're sending money to savings. So I will make the actual transfers. I like doing it. It's almost like I like checking things off a list. So I find joy in checking something off of a list. And so we do that. And then he's paid again in the middle of the month. And that's a lot less because it's not joint accounts. But we have purposefully set up our bills where a majority of them come out at the beginning of the month. And we pay them with those two combined paychecks. And then when he's paid in the middle of the month, that just helps pay some other smaller things and food and gas and things like that.
I love it. So what do you use your emergency fund for? So like you said, like you already kind of plan a little bit with your kids and the shoes. I've been there. I mean, my son the other day came home and like the sole like was separated from that. I'm like, what'd you do? He's like, I don't know. And I'm like, they were like 2 week old shoes, right? Like, how does this happen? So, I mean, I'm guessing that doesn't fall in the emergency fund category because you've already kind of planned that. And if you have kids, you should plan that. But what do you pull the trigger on that emergency fund on?
Oh gosh, for us it's beach vacations, gambling. No, I'm kidding. Obviously, I'm like waiting for you to laugh. You're like, she's crazy.
I was like,
for
wait
never
a second,
having
is she
her back.
Just well, I was like, beach vacations. Okay, that could be an emergency, but the gambling one, I don't know.
Gambling, like, just... lottery tickets when the lottery goes really high. No, for us, I'm thinking our stupid dog. I'm not our stupid dog. Our wonderful dog. He likes to eat things that aren't food. We probably should have, and he doesn't qualify for pet insurance because we didn't get it in time because we didn't know he would eat so many things such a young age. But unexpected vet visits. We could have a sinking fund for vet visits, but I don't want to complicate it. I'll just pull it out of emergency fund and replenish it when I need to. So unexpected vet visits. We've had a lot of things with our house go wrong. I mean, homeownership is not cheap. Don't believe the realtors that are going to sell you on, you know, this is going to be the amount you pay because this is your payment between taxes and maintenance and fixing the things that go wrong. We've had our upstairs bathroom leak several times and we've had to have plumbers come out. So we've had that. But most of the time, I really try not to touch it. Unexpected car repairs and then unexpected high medical bills. If it's a lower medical bill, I'll just find room in the budget and pay for it. So really our emergency fund is kind of like a last ditch thing. And I have to be careful with it. And the reason why I keep most of it separate in a separate account, well, number one is I want to earn more interest on it. But number two, I need a little bit of buffer personally. I need a roadblock between me and that money. So that way I give myself enough time to think twice before I do something stupid, like book a vacation with it. Having that separate helps me.
Definitely. Like you said, having it at another bank, like an Ally, you're earning a lot more interest. Mm-hmm. They're like 3-something%. So that's great. But it takes like 2 or 3 days, right? If you hit that transfer button to get back into your checking account. So it's not an immediate kind of thing. Now, I'm assuming that you do logistically pay on the credit card and then you're trying to pay that off in full every Friday. But that also gets you paid in full every month, right?
Yeah.
Effectively. So
I don't ever care. Yeah. That's one thing I've never done is I've never carried a balance on a credit card ever because I graduated college in 2008 and I couldn't get a credit card. My mom was like, okay, time to get a credit card. And I could not get one because no bank would give me one. And it was just, you know, financial crisis. Everything was a mess. And so my first credit card that I got was an Express credit card with a $300 limit. And my mom was like, buy one thing every month and pay it off. Yeah. And that's what I did. And I slowly learned how to use credit cards, but I have never carried a balance on a credit card and I refuse to. So I will pay for it either right after I make a purchase, like a big purchase, I'll pay for it right away. Or every Friday, I will just pay it off in full. And I even add in any pending charges there too.
I love it, which also is a huge side benefit is probably boosting your credit score to be amazing because you're closing that thing down at zero every single month, despite what the myth is that you should keep a balance. Like, no,
just pay that thing off. Credit utilization is always low. I just wish I had kept that Express credit card open. That would have been such a long time on my credit history.
Yeah, it's all good. Well, honestly, Allison, I thank you. We're almost here at the top of the hour. So want to share a little bit about, you know, where people can find you, what's going on. I'm going to put it up on the screen here while you give us the rundown.
Awesome. So you can go to inspiredbudget.com. That's my website. And I have so many amazing free resources for anyone who wants to budget, pay off debt, or save money. And then I also have a new book that is available for pre-order. This is the mock-up of it. It's not the actual book. It's called Money Made Easy. And I don't care for financial books that tell you exactly step-by-step, do this, do that, because I think that everybody's personal finances, it's just that, it's personal, it's unique. So instead of a do this, it's going to work for everyone. My book is more of like a choose your own adventure book, sharing what your options are so that way you can pick what works for you and your family just to have a better relationship with your money and make it be a stress-free event in your life.
I love it. I can't wait for that to come out. And
Thank
I
you.
appreciate you taking the time and joining us here today. Thanks
Of course.
Everybody for watching and listening, and we will see you next week.
Bye.